Hello, I'm Emma Daniels, Jason's Connection Administrative Assistant. Today our founder, Jason Harris, will be speaking with Chip Gernhardt, a father to an 18-year-old young woman with Down syndrome, a lobbyist in Ohio, and a former chairman to the National Down Syndrome Society. Mr. Gernhardt has worked to have the 529 ABLE law enacted, a law that says Ohioans are now able to open stable investments accounts, which allow participants to set aside up to $14,000 a year to pay for college, housing, and disability-related expenses.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us. I mean, we got a little bit of an explanation, but what is the ABLE Act?
Well, Jason, the basic understanding behind ABLE is that federal law for decades prevented people who qualified for Social Security or Medicaid because of a disability from having more than $2,000 worth of assets or earning more than about $680 a month, or they would lose their eligibility for those two very important programs. And the ABLE Act was an amendment to the 529 College Savings Account Program that creates a first-of-its-kind savings account instrument for people with disabilities to put money aside in their own name, which is the important distinction here, without losing eligibility for Social Security or Medicaid.
Great. And what is your involvement with the ABLE Act?
Well, as was pointed out, I have a daughter, Ann, who actually just turned 19 on Friday. Ann was born with Down syndrome, and after she was born, my wife, Jane, and I started to get more and more involved in issues related to families and individuals with Down syndrome, as well as other disabilities, ultimately resulting in me joining the board of the National Down Syndrome Society. And through that process at NDSS, we have a public policy arm, and about 10 years ago or so now, we recognized this issue. I mean, it's very much of a human rights issue, creating a public policy, created a scenario by which millions of people with disabilities were forced to choose between, you know, rather meager savings accounts or eligibility for Medicaid and Social Security. And as an organization, we decided to try to fix this wrong. And after 8 years of working through the legislative process in Congress, we got the ABLE Act passed in December of 2014. I was involved as a board member first, and then ultimately I chaired the board, NDSS board, and was actively involved in lobbying on this bill as a member of the board of NDSS.
And so who sponsored the ABLE Act in Congress? And as you said, it was passed in 2014. Who was the main sponsor? Did it get bipartisan, or is there?
Yeah, absolutely. It's surprisingly, though, it took us a while to land on the right effort. Initially, we wanted to fix the problem, you know, change Social Security law, change Medicaid law, you know, work on the tax code, and realize that if you try to get into those behemoth organizations with major issues that they deal with on a daily basis, it's just very difficult. And so the ultimate solution was a workaround. Let's amend the 529, the section of the Internal Revenue Code, to create these savings accounts. I mean, the underlying issue is still there. There is still a prohibition against having more than $2,000 worth of assets, unless you put it into an ABLE account. And that's an issue that's very important, because people mm-hmm. need to understand that if they put their money into the wrong account, they're going to create some problems. But ultimately, we got a great deal of bipartisan support. In the Senate, we had companion bills. In the Senate, Richard Burr, Republican Richard Burr from North Carolina, and Democrat Bob Casey from Pennsylvania were our lead sponsors. And in the House, we had Republicans Andrew Crenshaw from Florida, Kathy McMorris Rogers from Washington State, Republican Pete Sessions from Texas, and Democrat Chris Van Hollen from Maryland as mm-hmm. the primary sponsors of the House bill. Ultimately, three quarters or more, 80% of Congress ended up as co-sponsors of the bill, from the most liberal to the most conservative. Members mm-hmm. of Congress were co-sponsors, and we had overwhelming support when the ultimate vote was taken. 404 members of the House voted yes, and I believe 76 members of the Senate voted yes when the respective bills came before the body.
It also seems like the ABLE Act had a lot of support from disability organizations. Even organizations that haven't predominantly worked together seem to be in support of this.
Yeah, that's true. And it was a great effort. And I just happened to be involved with NDSS. We were active on this, Autism Speaks, Fragile X, the ARC. We had, I think, ultimately 60 or 70 disability organizations that had signed on as supporters of the bill that were extremely important in our ability to get it passed, because it expanded our network significantly, and to the extent that they engaged in advocacy on the bill, they were able to reach out to members with whom they had influence and let it be known that the passage of the ABLE Act was something that was important to them, their members, who were constituents of those members of Congress or supporters of them, or whatever their status was.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like the 529 that you used for the basis of this, and I think is an extension of it now, is like the college planning, where you're able to save money that's not tax deductible, that you can keep in without taxes.
Right. The benefit of the ABLE account is that you can use it for a number of issues that are disability related, including education, but also health care, transportation, assistive technology, workforce development, and other issues that are related to your disability. As you pointed out, it also goes tax-free, like a 529 education account. It's after-tax dollars that go into the account, but if the money grows tax-free, and if you withdraw it for an eligible expense, which, as I described, is pretty broad, then you don't pay any taxes on the growth in the value of your account. So, for instance, I mean, typical with kids without disabilities, if you create your 529 college account the day after your daughter is born, if you let it grow for 18 years, you can have a great, you could have increased the wealth of that account significantly. And the same is true now for the ABLE account. The one difference, or a big difference, is at some point in the beneficiary's life, the account holder's life, that account also can become much more like a checking account. For instance, mm-hmm. My daughter hopefully will be living independent from her mom and me, and she'll be able to pay rent from this. She'll be able to pay for transportation to and from work. She'll be able to pay for job training courses or for postgraduate, post-secondary education. She could pay for an aid to help her, you know, with disability-related issues. So, you know, much more like a checking account. And so I could see this being utilized as a savings instrument and creating an amount of money that can help that person over the span of his or her life, but also an account that is used much more often than withdrawing money once a semester to pay for college for 4 years.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Now, is it an ABLE account or is it a stable account? Because I've heard both.
Well, the federal legislation and the state legislation is ABLE, Achieving a Better Life Experience, is the name of the bill. And most of the state bills follow that. They just called it the Ohio ABLE account or the Ohio ABLE Act. But the program in Ohio is called the stable account, primarily because it's the state treasurer achieving a better life experience account. So it's just a play on the ABLE account term, and we've modified it or made it unique to Ohio. And although there is no residency requirement for anybody, if you qualify for an ABLE account and you live in Nevada and your state hasn't acted yet, you can sign up for the stable account in Ohio, for instance. And if Nevada ultimately puts its own ABLE account in place, you can roll that money over to that state account if you wish. Right now there are only four states that have an ABLE account that's active: Ohio, Tennessee, Nebraska, and Florida. Florida's is limited to Florida residents only. The other three, you can live anywhere. And Ohio's is the most robust program that exists right now.
Great. And you mentioned who is eligible for a stable or ABLE account?
Well, if you qualify for Social Security or Medicaid because of a disability, that can be a broad spectrum of intellectual disabilities, cognitive disabilities, physical disabilities, or your doctor, you know, essentially says in his or her opinion, you are disabled and qualified for an ABLE account. That's how you can qualify. So somebody who's blind automatically qualifies. Somebody who has Down syndrome automatically qualifies. Spina bifida. I mean, you can sort of imagine the types of disabilities and conditions that would qualify somebody. But that's how you qualify, and the legislation states that the disability has to have occurred by the time you turn 26. You know, that was determined, that was really foisted upon us through the legislative process. I suspect we will address that in the future. I mean, I personally don't believe that that's fair.
Yeah.
You either have a disability or you don't. And if you do, you should qualify. But that's how the legislative process works. So get what you can, and then hopefully you come back to tweak it or to fix unintended consequences or anomalies like this. I just think that, again, if you have a disability, you should be able to apply for an account, regardless of the age of the onset of the disability.
Yeah, and so you said one of the things that you can see is for able to get an ABLE or a stable account is SSI or Medicaid. How does the ABLE Act affect or impact SSI or Medicaid, or personally when you get a stable account affect your SSI or Medicaid benefits?
Well, it doesn't. This takes it out of the means tested format of Social Security and Medicaid. I mean, the unfortunate situation, the underlying problem is that these disability issues were put into the Medicaid program. And the Medicaid program is different. I mean, people with disabilities, the impact, the challenges that they have different than people that are economically poor. And so you have mm-hmm. these means tests that don't necessarily apply to your disability. And so to have these means tests, I think, it's the wrong place to start the conversation. I think it's okay to have the conversation, is this person or his or her family able to care for him or her? That should be part of the conversation. But unfortunately, we start there. So what the ABLE account does is it removes this money from means testing, and therefore it doesn't impact your eligibility for Social Security or Medicaid because of whatever assets you have in that account. Now, part of the legislation says that if your ABLE account gets to or exceeds $100,000, while you don't lose your eligibility for Social Security, you don't receive the check, the monthly check, as long as your account is worth more than $100,000. And I understand that from a fiscal policy. Somebody who has an account that's worth a significant amount of money might not otherwise need to receive a monthly SSI check or SSDI check. So, that's one of the governors on this that keeps people from gaming the system, for instance. I mean, if people would do that anyway, and I think that the likelihood of that is remote, but it's one of the things we did.
Yeah, how do you do it? Because some people, go ahead.
No, I'm done with that point.
Okay. Yeah, one of the questions is because of that 1,400 limit a year and the 100,000, I can see where that's also used to go against fraud. Some of the times people actually stop getting jobs if they, because there's different level of different types of jobs different people with disabilities want, and sometimes losing medical benefits that come through Medicaid or SSI that won't be covered, by the amount they make or even sometimes savings. How does that work with the sort of the ABLE Act to make sure that it doesn't restrict in some way people from actually assessing jobs in different types of markets?
Well, the $14,000 contribution limit was imposed on us. And again, I think that is unfair. That doesn't exist with the traditional 529 account. And I just think that it is further discriminatory policy that burdens a population that already has it tough enough. I have three children, two sons and a daughter. My daughter has Down syndrome. I've had 529 accounts for my sons since they were very little, and I couldn't have one for my daughter because she has an extra 21st chromosome. Now I do, but yet public policy, I think erroneous public policy, still tells us that while I can put significantly more in my able-minded son's accounts, my daughter who has Down syndrome is limited to $14,000. So, I was part of this, and I am as proud as anything I've ever done professionally to have been proud of the effort to get ABLE done. but we need to fix that $14,000 a year limit. And we will. We will. We'll come back and do that. So to get to your question, your paycheck can go into the ABLE account, and so this gives the account holder $12,000 more a year of capacity to put into a savings instrument, you know, an account of some type. And we've already drafted and introduced legislation that we're calling ABLE to Work, and we will. It's been introduced in this Congress. We will work it in the next Congress starting in 2017. But what that will do is exempt earned income up to $11,770 a year from the $14,000 year limit. So, for instance, you know, my wife and I could put $14,000 a year into our daughter's account. She could earn $11,770 and put that into the account and not lose her eligibility or go over the $14,000 a year limit. So, as an incentive to work, I mean, you pointed out not wanting to keep people from being able to take jobs and better themselves. This is really about economic self-sufficiency and self-determination and providing an opportunity for people who not only want to work but can work, the opportunity to actually work and accept a paycheck and get raises and pay taxes and, you know, contribute back through paying taxes. I mean, this allows my family, my wife and me and our daughter, to put her in a position so that we take care of her so that you don't have to. Because if we can't do that, you will absolutely have to do that, because it's unlikely that she will ever be able to earn enough money to adequately take care of herself in a meaningful manner and without significant public support.
Yeah, and I think that's important, because I think there's a lot of people with disabilities who want to be able to take care of themselves. It just becomes so financially burdensome to get some of the accommodations and stuff that are needed that it actually becomes a trap. So I think this is really important that you guys are opening up these conversations, and that so far it seems like at least getting it started, even though obviously with any legislation there has to be compromise.
Right, that's just the nature of the beast. I mean, you're not going to get 100% of what you want because there are always challenges. I mean, there's a cost to this, and I would argue that if you score legislation like this dynamically, the government is paid back far more than it gives off. And the government doesn't pay out anything for this. It determines the cost of this program by the lost tax payments on the money they believe will go into disabled accounts. That static scoring, if you take the use of this money and how it's returned back into the economy, I think you'll find that there's much more payback than there is lost to the federal treasury.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think that's a good point. So I think it seems like that this is going to be good. In 10 to 20 years, where do you hope the ABLE account are working within the system, and what people are saying about it?
Well, I hope that we do a couple things along the way. I hope that we are able to remove the 26-year-old limit from the legislation. I hope that we are able to remove the $14,000 a year contribution from the legislation, or at least increase it. I think you should just do away with it. Every state has an upper limit of its respective ABLE account, or excuse me, 529 accounts. And I think that's fair. You know, there should be an upper limit, not a problem with that. But I think that the program should be equal. I'm not asking for anything more than my boys are getting. I'm not asking any more for my daughter Anne than my boys Hank and Charlie are getting right now through their 529 account. So I would like to see equity among these accounts. What I would like is I would like for every person who is eligible for an ABLE account to, one, know about it, and thank you for doing this podcast because this is one of the ways we can get people to know about these things, but I would like everybody to know about it and to at least have had the opportunity to investigate whether it makes sense for him or her to have one account. And there are tens of millions of people in this country with disabilities. And if you look at the poverty rate and income level and the earnings potential of people with disabilities, it's hampered. I mean it's a tough existence for many people. And providing a savings instrument that not only allows them some self-determination and control over their own financial security, but also gives them the incentive to work without fear of losing much needed programs. And that would make me feel good. I think we've done great work, and I say we expansively. There were thousands of people that worked on this over the years. Many organizations, a wonderful and collaborative effort. But I would love for just anybody that could qualify to at least have the opportunity to do this and take some control back in their own lives, so they're not being dictated to by local, state, or federal governmental entities. It's really scared to, to do something that might better their financial position because of eligibility issues.
Mm-hmm. And so where can people get involved with either signing up or helping with future processes with things that you're trying to do later on for the Stable Act and the ABLE Act?
Well, again, there are many organizations that participated in this effort. The two organizations that really led the charge for these 10 years is Autism Speaks and the National Down Syndrome Society. And so reaching out to one of those two organizations, whether you're affiliated with another type of organization or not, they can help direct you if you want to be involved in ongoing efforts. And we're not going to stop. I mean, we've gained a lot of goodwill. As I said, we're coming back with ABLE to Work. And in 2017 and 18, I'm confident that we're going to get that passed to further incentivize people to not only work, but incentivize employers to find opportunities for people with disabilities to work as well. Another way to learn more about this, you can go to the respective websites of NDSS or Autism Speaks to learn more about the advocacy, ndss.org, find out what our public policy is. If you're interested in a stable account, which is the Ohio account, but is, again, available to anybody in this country who qualifies, I would encourage them to go to stableaccount.com, stable.com, and check it out. It's an easy website to navigate. It's easy to determine eligibility, and if you decide to sign up for one of these accounts, It'll take you about 10 minutes. I am proud not only to have been involved in this, but also my family was honored by the fact that our daughter Anne opened the very first ABLE account in the entire country through Ohio Stable Program. So it was an exciting, very exciting opportunity for us. And I would, one of the things that I've come across over these last couple of months since Stable got put into place is that people are looking at this as more of an investment account, long-term estate planning type thing, which it certainly can be. But I would encourage people to look at it more like a traditional 529 account that most people just decide to open up on their own without, you know, going to a financial advisor. And I'm not telling people not to seek advice on these, but get the account started so you can start putting money away. It's important to start growing these assets as quickly as possible and do it as early as possible in the beneficiary's life, compounded interest and all of that. It grows significantly over time.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you for all you've done and all of the hard work that everybody's done to get this amazing ABLE Act and Stable Accounts started and the work that you're going to continue to do. Is there any last things you want to share?
Well, you know, I think that this is a great example of an idea that was literally conceived at a kitchen table in Northern Virginia, the home of Steve and Catherine Beck. A couple that have a daughter with Down syndrome, and they were talking to some other friends one night, about 11, 12 years ago, and somebody brought up this issue, that do you realize you can't have more than $2,000 or you lose your eligibility, and people didn't really know that, and so a few people starting to get involved, and then a few more, and then NDSS, and then Autism Speaks, and this literally was a grassroots effort that certainly had professional management through NDSS and Autism Speaks and others, but it was literally a grassroots effort that has been described by some as the most significant disability legislation since the passage of the ADA, which is very exciting to have been involved with. That was passed 25 years ago, but it's also sort of a statement about disability rights and advocacy that it took 25 years since ADA to get something like this that many described as a no-brainer. They couldn't believe that public policy has been in place for 50 years. I mean, it took us 50 years to fix this. The $2,000 asset level was put into place in 1964 and never went up a penny. Now think about inflation with health care and the cost of living and everything else over those 50 years, and yet this asset determination goes up not 1 cent. So there's still a lot of work to do, and you know, we're up to the task to do it. And I guess the final thing is, while the legislative effort took a while, there were so many members of Congress that were real champions on this issue and worked tirelessly with us on the floor of the House or the Senate, behind the scenes, providing staff hours to help us work through the legislative process to get this done. And it was not refreshing, I don't want to say that, but it was heartening to be a part of the process and see so many good people, hardworking people that could otherwise and were otherwise busy with other things dedicate years to getting this done and really becoming emotional and professional advocates for us. I often ran into members of Congress who said, John Boehner was talking to me about your bill. He wants this thing done. Or Bob Casey was back home in Pennsylvania talking about your bill. It was really very exciting, and it proved to me that you can get big stuff done, in the world of public policy.
Well, thank you for joining us today. I mean, honestly, thank you for all the hard work and what you shared today. I think it's going to be helpful to a lot of people to hear the information that you shared, but also the personal stories as well. And, I mean, if there's anything that we can do to help get this out there or help anything else, you can always contact us.
Well, spread the word. I mean, the biggest thing now, really, is making sure that those people who are eligible know about it and are directed to a place where they can do research on it. And then it's up to them to make the decision. But there are still lots and lots of people who otherwise qualify who don't even know that this legislation passed or that these accounts exist in four states' records. So
great. Thank you so
much. Thank you.
Great. We definitely will. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Yep. You too. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.